Good day and welcome to the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law and Physicians Respond to the Release of COVID-19 Racial Data. Currently, all phone lines are in a listen-only mode. Later, there'll be an opportunity to ask questions during a question-and-answer session. You may register to ask a question at any time by pressing the star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Please be advised today's program may be recorded. It is now my pleasure to turn the program over to your moderator of today's press call, Ms. Sue Dorfman. You may begin.
Good afternoon, everyone. Again, my name is Sue Dorfman. I'm from the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Thank you again for joining us on this call. You're going to be listening to Kristen Clark, the President and Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. We are also going to be joined today by two physicians, Dr. Tyson Bell, who is Assistant Professor of Medicine and the in Critical Care Physician in Charlottesville, Virginia. And Dr. Jessica Nelson, she's an emergency room physician in Houston, Texas. I'm now going to turn the call.
Good afternoon. My name is Kristen Clark. I'm president and executive director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. We are a national civil rights organization committed to increasing access to economic opportunities for Black communities and other communities of color, and we have prioritized increasing access to health care for communities of color because this is a fundamental civil right. We know that communities of color have historically suffered from systemic discrimination and racial bias in our health care system. We know that racism infects virtually every stage of our health care system. And this reality has resulted in lower rates of insurance coverage, worse care, and poorer health outcomes for communities of color. And we also know that underlying health conditions impacting Black communities, such as diabetes, heart conditions, and asthma, increase the risk tied to COVID. Data released by some states at the beginning of the month indicated that COVID was disproportionately impacting Black communities. And over the past few weeks, we've now received more data, which underscores this pattern. On March 6th of this year, the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law, in partnership with several hundred medical professionals and doctors, sent a demand letter to the Department of Health and Human Services requesting that they and their sub-agencies, including the CDC, immediately release race and ethnicity data tied to COVID test cases and outcomes. Without this data, officials and lawmakers are not equipped to develop targeted and strategic responses to the current pandemic. We also sent letters to every state health department in the country that was not releasing data at that stage. This past Friday, we've seen a significant development that I'd like to respond to today. The CDC, for the first time, released its first breakdown of COVID-19 cases by race. The CDC data, however, was missing race information for 75% of all cases with any demographic data reported. And that data set also did not include race information for any COVID-19 deaths. We deem this astounding. For the few cases that did have race data, that limited data set made clear that 30% of patients were Black, which stands in stark contrast to the number of African Americans in the overall population, which stands at 13%. So the little data that was revealed makes clear that there are racial disparities underlying this crisis. However, since we've sent our letter to the federal government, we acknowledge that there are now more states that are filling in the voids that have been created in the absence of the federal government producing this data. There are more states now reporting on race data for COVID-19 cases. The Associated Press reported that there are at least 24 states that are now reporting racial demographic data for COVID mortalities. And they've also observed that this data reflects that African Americans are dying at disproportionately higher rates. So the state data that has been made available confirms some of the patterns that have emerged from the federal government's limited data set. Despite these clear racial disparities, we are deeply troubled at the federal government's woefully anemic response. The Department of Health and Human Services has not offered a concrete plan about how it intends to tackle the problem in front of us. The fact that only 30%, they do not have race information tied to all of their data. We know that our communities are being ravaged by COVID and that the federal government has a role to play. The first step that we think is critical is that the Department of Health and Human Services must release test and outcome data by race and ethnicity, just as it has done for cases. There is no reason for, no defensible reason for HHS to continue to exclude this information from the public. We need transparency. HHS must immediately put out test and outcome data by race and ethnicity. We also believe that HHS must prioritize comprehensive and robust data collection for all test cases and outcomes. That means working with its sub-agencies, including CDC, to accurately and comprehensively collect demographic data, including race and ethnicity information for all COVID cases. The federal government must also outline concrete protocols and provide assistance to state public health officials to ensure that we are consistently collecting and reporting this data across the country. We also deem it critical that HHS develop a concrete action plan to address the clear racial disparities faced by Black communities and other communities of color. That action plan may include things such as targeting these communities with free access to testing and free access to healthcare. That action plan may involve ensuring that essential workers have personal protective equipment. That action plan may involve ensuring that hospitals in these communities are adequately resourced and have the equipment that they need to care for patients. Our plan is to continue vigorously pushing the federal government to do its part, to prioritize the urgent needs of the communities that we serve in the weeks and months ahead. And we plan to do this work with the full support of our network of doctors and medical professionals who you'll hear from next. They stand on the front lines of this crisis. Every day they are treating growing numbers of African Americans and communities of color who are falling victim to the pandemic. I want to turn the floor over now to Dr. Bell.
Hello, everyone. Thanks for being on this call. My name is Tyson Bell, and I'm a critical care and infectious disease physician in Charlottesville, Virginia, taking care of COVID patients and others. I'm glad we're here today. I will just share that I'm frustrated that it's taken so long to get us here today. The first COVID case was identified in the United States January 21st, and it's 3 months later. And we've just now recently started to have the conversation about who is being affected by this and who's disproportionately dying and having more disease than others. And it's what's frustrating is that there's no reason for it. Like Ms. Clark said, there's no defensible reason why we aren't collecting this data, why we're not disseminating this data. When we look at what's going on in the states that have released data, it shows that despite making up about 14% of the population of the areas covered by these states, African Americans are making up one-third of those who are dying from disease. And the numbers are very, very important, and we definitely need to get more numbers. But what I need to get across is that this is personal for me. I'm a black physician. My mom works at Target. My dad's an essential worker and a bus driver. I'm thinking about my community, my family members, when I'm thinking about this data. So when I see something like in Louisiana, blacks are making up over 70% of people dying in those communities, that makes me think of my community members, my family members. So the numbers matter, but you know, these are human lives that are at stake and at risk that we need to keep at the forefront. And to think that we can't even collect this data and disseminate it, you know, I work in an academic center, and getting the data and knowing where the problems are is essential to doing your work. And there's no defensible reason why we don't have this. And a lot of what we heard from CDC and other leaders is that it's very hard to collect this data, that it's a lot of it's being collected at the local level, that these agencies are overwhelmed. There's a lot going on, obviously, with the COVID pandemic in addition to everything else going on. But that's not good enough. If the agencies are overwhelmed, if they need support, then provide them the support that they need. Get people on the front lines to help collect the data. And I think it's just as essential as distributing ventilators, PPE, and getting critical resources to people. It's also critical that you get the data that you need. The CDC's mission is to protect America from health, safety, and security threats. They guard and protect the health of the population. And my response to a lot of the statements about how difficult it is to collect the data is that we just need to have a better solution. What we have here is a barrier, and anyone who collects data knows that this is a problem, that getting data is a problem. But my response is that healthcare workers are facing daily barriers too. Myself, Dr. Nelson, we're on the front lines. We're taking care of patients, and we're showing up despite fears that we might get infected, that we might transmit to other patients or to our families. We are overcoming those barriers to show up and do what needs to be done. My mom is showing up and letting people get critical supplies and food. My dad is showing up so that people can get around and get to where they need to go. They are breaking down barriers and not making excuses. Like so many other black essential workers who are overcoming barriers to show up, we are not making excuses. And what I'm seeing so far is an excuse, and it simply cannot be tolerated. I saw a report from 1999 released by the CDC, an MMWR report, saying the exact same thing that they're saying now, that we need to improve our data collection around racial disparities and race and ethnicity. And they're actually worse now when we look at the percentage of racial data that they're collecting. And that was 1999, two decades ago. We have grown leaps and bounds by our ability to collect data, to aggregate it and disseminate data. And there's no excuse why we're even worse off now than we were back then. So I'll just end by saying the black community has showed up for this country. We've worked hard to push it forward, but we are sick and tired of being underrepresented in power and influence and overrepresented in the death and suffering in this country, in both COVID and chronic conditions. We are going to continue showing up for the community, but more than anything, we need to be able to do our job while knowing that the agency charged to protect the health and well-being of the country is looking out for us. I need these questions to be asked from the beginning. I need this to be on the minds of the leadership about how is this being affected in the black and brown communities and our underserved populations. If there are problems collecting data, I need them to be fixed. I need that data to be acted on, but most of all, I need the excuses to end. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tyson Bell. It's going to be Dr. Jessica Nelson. She's an emergency room physician in Houston, Texas. Dr. Nelson.
Hi, thank you for the introduction. Yes, I'm a board-certified ER physician in the Houston area that have been working with the underserved population, underrepresented population in Houston, within the Harris County district and beyond. So just like Dr. Bell, I would like to echo the frustration that we are all experiencing with not having the data and not having the information that we need. And even though, you know, we're thankful that the CDC did release some of the information, but it's so many holes and so many gaps in that data, right? 75% of those that they released, we don't even know what the race was for a majority of that demographic. But what we do know already, though, is that the data that they have given us has shown that the African-American population has definitely been disproportionately affected by COVID-19. and that is, in fact, an issue. So we definitely need the transparency from the CDC. We need the transparency in the data across the board to help us determine on the front lines how we can better equip the hospitals that serve those populations and better equip and prepare those on the front line with the proper PPE. For instance, right, Harris County Hospital District serves a majority of the Black and Latino community, which is making up a large amount of those affected by COVID. And, you know, when I was working there on Friday, we had we have limited resources, right? I work in both the private sector and the public sector, and to see the difference in what type of equipment and preparedness the private sector has versus what we have in the public hospitals was just shocking and disappointing, to say the least. You know, in the private sector, when I work there, we have, you know, quite a few PAPR masks. We have the N95s. We have those things. But then when you work in the public sector, which is where, you know, they see the highest volume and they see the sickest patients and they see the highest acuity, they didn't have those things to protect their front line. You know, they didn't have that to protect their residents and their med students and their doctors and their nurses. And that's just really disappointing to see. You know, not only that in terms of protecting the front line, you know, when you're talking about a hospital district that takes care of a majority of the indigent population and the underrepresented, if you know that already, we should be preparing that hospital and in terms of ventilators and non-rebreathers and all of the things that they'll need in terms of respiratory support and managing those patients, not just in the ER, but in the ICU and in different parts of the hospital. And if we know that already and we know that this illness and we know this virus is going to affect a vast majority disproportionately the African-American and Hispanic population, we need to be preparing for that. So like Dr. Bell said, just saying like, oh, yes, we know this is a problem and not really offering a solution and offering ideas on how we're going to start preparing our hospitals and start preparing our community with the data that we have is not acceptable. And again, just like they, you know, people have been slow to respond to how we have responded to this virus in terms of social distancing, in terms of like shutting down different businesses and things like that to keep the community safe. We know we've responded slowly already, and to now respond slow again to another, you know, we have data, we have these facts, and to still say we don't have a solution, we don't know what we're going to do is simply just unacceptable. And it's going to leave us all vulnerable to not only, you know, this illness spreading, but it's going to leave our front line open as well. Doctors are going to get sick, more people are going to get sick. It's just not acceptable.
This is Kristen Clark. I just want to make a few brief observations about state-level data before we open the floor for questions. As I noted at the top of the call, we issued a letter on April 6th. That's a correction to the March 6th date that I said earlier. April 6th to the federal government and to state public health departments. We observed that there are certain states like Colorado, which have noted that reports that they receive often are missing race and ethnicity information. But today, Colorado proactively is taking steps to address this, including working to clarify the type of data that hospitals and local providers must report. We also engaged with Delaware and observed that its health department has now taken steps to issue orders that require relevant labs and healthcare entities to report the necessary data, including race. They're missing demographic data for about 50% of patients, and they have indicated that in a proactive fashion, that as they collect data, they will retroactively populate that data and provide greater transparency to the public. I'll also just observe that there are about two states that are providing race data for tests, and that's astonishing. Those two states are Kansas and Illinois, test level data is critical to ensuring that people are getting equitable access to testing. We'll also observe, based on our work, that there are about 34 states reporting race data for confirmed cases. We are astounded to see that Louisiana is not included in that group of states, given the stark racial impact that we know exists in that state. And there are 26 states that are reporting race data for COVID deaths, and Texas and Florida, interestingly, are not reporting that particular data set. The patchwork response that we're seeing across the country is incredibly problematic and underscores the absence of leadership that we're seeing at the federal government level. We need the federal government to step in and to provide clarity for states on how they should go about collecting and reporting data. We need the federal government to provide guidance and support for states to properly collect and report data as well. Sue, we can open the floor.
Aaron, please let journalists know how they can pose questions.
Certainly. At this time, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star, then one on your touchtone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, it is star, then one to ask a question, and we'll pause to allow questions to queue. And Sue, would you like to announce questioners?
It seems like everybody is still digesting the information. 1 second. Are there any questions?
1 moment. Thank you for your patience, everyone. It is star, then one.
Okay, the first person up is going to be Vanessa Williams from the Washington Post.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks, and good day to everyone. I guess my question is, at the federal level, they seem to be moving full speed ahead with the notion of reopening the country. How do you respond to that, given that, you know, the report, what you're reporting today is that there isn't even a good response to the information you've asked for. How important is that information to any plan to try to reopen the country? And my second question would just be sort of, what's the next step with regard to trying to get this information? Thank you.
I can take the first part of that question. So reopening the country, this is Tyson Bell, by the way. Reopening a country is a very difficult topic because you're balancing the economy, obviously, along with the health and well-being of the country. And what we've seen is that when social distancing goes away, because the virus is still circulating, it's expected that you're going to have an increase in cases. So one of the things that's absolutely crucial to have in place is a robust testing infrastructure so that once you do open up the country again and people can are going more in closer contact with each other, that you can aggressively test and isolate people so that you can limit the spread further. Because what we don't want to have is a second rise in our cases after we have our initial first peak. And the only way to really protect against that is to have the testing that's capable of doing that. A lot of the public health experts that I've listened to and read from have said that we need an estimated 500,000 tests per day in order to be able to safely say that we can aggressively test and isolate people. And we're doing around 150,000 per day or something like that. We've tested somewhere around 4 million people so far. And we would need 500,000 per day in order to safely say that we can isolate. So I think it's safe to say that we're just not there as far as our capability right now. And there's a conversation about, is this the responsibility of the federal government or the states? I can tell you when my state was setting up in-house testing at my university, we couldn't even get the reagents available. They weren't in our state. We need to get them from the federal government. So to say that the federal government doesn't have a role in this, which is, I think, the message coming out of the White House, is absurd. It's such a massive, complicated effort in order to ramp up your testing capability that it has to be at a higher level than what individual states can do. So, you know, that's one condition. As far as, you know, balancing, you know, the effects of the economy, you know, I'm going to stay in my lane, and I'm a physician, and you know, the medical side is what I can speak to. But being able to do testing is absolutely crucial.
This is Kristen Clark. We need a data-driven and an empirically supported approach to this pandemic. The calls to reopen the country are both premature and defy logic. We are still gathering data to help identify where the hotspots are in the country. Just this morning, we learned that there are 1,828 detainees at a correctional facility in Marion County, Ohio, who have tested positive. And that's a facility that holds 2,500 people. There are high infection rates in Franklin and Cuyahoga County as well. And this data is being brought to light at a moment when we are seeing protests from people who are calling for the government to reopen. My hope is that we will not see our officials put profits over people as we continue to respond and address this pandemic. We need to fully understand the data to understand how we can most effectively combat the ongoing crisis that we are up against. Reopening the country now is both a reckless and dangerous move that would threaten public health and safety.
Next up is Maya King from Politico.
Good afternoon, everyone. I just wanted to follow up on the point about the lack of testing or the lack of data around who's being tested and hospitalized, and kind of ask, you know, if you could illuminate what data sets matter the most to you guys right now. Would it be on testing or confirmed cases or death? You know, what are the figures that you would really need to understand the situation more clearly?
Our doctors?
Yes,
this is Jessica Nelson, Houston, Texas, ER physician. So for us, it would not just be the individuals tested from a medical standpoint, rather, not just the individuals tested, but those that have tested positive, and certainly those that have died from COVID have gotten it and have died also. That will help us to determine what comorbidities increase your probability of not surviving this illness, and therefore help the different hospitals, communities, and the doctors be able to better equipped on dealing with certain demographics in the community.
This is Tyson Bell. I think that any and all information that's available, we should have. I think the ability to know where your cases are coming from, who your test cases look like, in addition to who is not being tested, if they're coming in with a similar presentation, because we know that there are unconscious biases that can play out in healthcare, such that when a Black person comes in with similar symptoms, they may not be tested at the same rate that a white person does. We need to know that information as well, too. But to effectively plan for your hospital surge and really inform your modeling, you need to have enough testing that you can confidently say, this is what our peak is going to look like. This is our population that we're most concerned about, so that you can make aggressive interventions to hopefully reverse that and flatten the curve.
Next up is Tyrone Beeson from the Los Angeles Times.
Hello. Thanks for the presentation today. I wanted to ask a little bit about Michigan and Wisconsin and what you're finding. What you're finding there. I've noticed in news reports anyway, that other cities besides Detroit, which is a hot spot, like Flint and Ann Arbor, are also experiencing these disproportionalities. Is there anyone who could speak a little bit about those states?
This is Kristen Clark. We know that Milwaukee has some of the starkest racial disparities that we have seen across the country. And a lot of that played out in dramatic fashion last week during the primary election, where we saw many African Americans braving access to the polls under conditions where they were subjected to long lines and long waits. We know that there were many African Americans who were simply disenfranchised and unable to vote because they were unwilling to put themselves at risk by going out in public or could not physically go out in public. In Detroit, we know that there are health centers that are particularly beleaguered right now and unable to deal with the high rate and pace of deaths. There is a critical need to provide support to our community health centers serving the African American community in Detroit, which has been particularly hard hit.
Anyone else? Next up is Hazel Trice Eddy.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
My question, I guess, could go either way, but I guess I really want to ask Kristen Clark from the legal standpoint. I think the Washington Post already asked the question, what is the next step for demanding these numbers? And also, I would like to know if there is any indication or implication that there might be a cover-up in actually releasing these numbers because of the racial factor.
This is Kristen Clark. What we know is that the CDC typically and ordinarily tracks outbreaks and provides detailed data that includes information about the age, race, and location of the people affected. And the federal government has not done the same for COVID-19. It is hard to know whether that is intentional or not. But we're going to do our part and continue to bring pressure to bear on the federal government at every stage to meet the standards that it's met previously when it's been put to the task of reporting data to the public. The data is woefully deficient of the information that our doctors and healthcare professionals on the front lines need in order to strategically and effectively combat this pandemic. And we know what the CDC has done in the past, and this is a gross departure from the normal reporting that we know that the CDC has the capacity to do.
Thank you.
Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star, then one on your touchtone phone.
Yes, next up is Ashley Norwood from Mississippi Public Broadcasting.
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, great. So, well, I guess the question I have here, I know you've mentioned a few states, and this may be for Kristen, but I'm wondering if you have any notes on what's happening in Mississippi, or, you know, an opinion on the way we've been handling our data. I guess it's been about a week or two when we first heard our health department announced that, yes, more than 50% of the infection rate and deaths by COVID are African Americans, and it was a hard statistic to take, especially considering all the challenges and barriers that currently exist in rural Mississippi among our, impoverished communities, and our health department also has said that they will be releasing more information about racial data in terms of deaths by county, et cetera. But if you had any notes or any comments about Mississippi in particular, I'm interested in hearing that.
So this is Kristen Clark. We know that based on data being reported presently that African Americans are 107 of 169 deaths in Mississippi. That is disproportionate to the percentage that they comprise in the population. We also know that Mississippi is a state where there is low access to health care among African Americans. And this is a state where we think data can inform a more strategic and targeted response to the pandemic. African Americans are also overrepresented among cases, making up about 2,300 of 4,512 cases. The Deep South is a part of the country that we are deeply concerned about because of the high rates of existing preconditions and poor access to health care. And we also know that there are many African Americans who are without the ability to work remotely and are in positions where they're interfacing with the public at a very, very high rate, including nursing assistants. And African Americans hold those positions at high rates in Louisiana. So the Deep South, we do think, is an area that requires a more targeted response, and data is a critical weapon in the fight.
Thank you.
It looks like William has queued back up again for a follow-up.
Hi, I'm sorry. Actually, since then, my questions have been answered, so I'll pass. Thank you.
Okay. Aaron, do you want to announce how you queue in for questions one more time?
Certainly. Once again, if you'd like to ask a question, please press the star, then one on your touch-tone phone. You may withdraw your question at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, it's star, then one, and we'll pause for any additional questions. Again, it is star, then one.
Well, it looks like that there are no additional questions at this time. I want to say thank you very much for everybody joining. Kristen Clark, President and Executive Director of the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Dr. Tyson Bell, Assistant Professor of Medicine in the Divisions of Infectious Disease and Health and in Pulmonary and Critical Care Medicine at UVA Health in Charlottesville, Virginia, and Dr. Jessica Nelson, Emergency Room Physician in Houston, Texas. Again, my name is Sue Dorfman. I've been the moderator of the call from the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. If anybody has any questions, please email them to me at press@lawyerscommittee.org. Again, that's press@lawyerscommittee.org. We will be issuing a press release later today, and the recording of this call will also be available. I'm also going to encourage everyone to visit the COVID-19 page on the Lawyers Committee website, which is lawyerscommittee.org. Again, thank you very much for joining. Have a good day.